This is Beyond Words with Dr. William Campbell, awakening the world to the power of God's Word. And now here is your host, Dr. William Campbell.
Welcome to Beyond Words Radio, where it's our ambition to move beyond just talking about the Christian talk, to walking the walk, and to walk more like Jesus. And let's be honest, if the walk is real, it starts in the heart. It starts with a passion, with a joy. It's where God, from the inside out, is moving our lives. That's how it works in other relationships. So it is in our relationship with God. We have with us a guest who knows a lot about the song in our hearts, Laura Story. You may know that name. She's written a lot of best-selling music. She has stirred my life and my heart for many years. And Laura, I thank you for joining us around this theme.
Well, thanks so much for having me. It is a theme that's close to my heart, so I appreciated you wanting to have me on your show.
Yeah, well, you know, some of us don't sing, but I think we can all have a song in our hearts. And to me, that's a picture of a place of joy and sometimes of sorrow. But, you know, David in the Psalms, he had his ups and his downs. And what made him unique was he was so transparent. Can you talk a little, because I know that's who you are. You're very transparent as a person, and the Lord just shines through you. But why is it important that we have hearts that are open like David's?
I appreciate you even bringing up David, because that's the first thing I thought of when you said that. It was Psalm 40, where David says the Lord put a new song in his heart. But prior to that, he says he is choosing to bless God even despite what he's gone through, because he kind of touches on the fact, you know, a little bit of his testimony, the fact that God has brought him out of the miry clay and that he's going to rejoice in the midst of that. So I feel like our song, whether it's a literal song kind of that God has been doing in me, or whether it's just people choosing to respond to the things that they have walked through, choosing to respond with praise. I think that really is the important thing. I'm learning, you know, in my old age, as I age, I'm learning that life is not as much about what we walk through, but how we walk through what we walk through. I'm learning just that that's what will be remembered of me, I think, not the things that I did, but really how I responded to the things that happened in my life and whether I chose bitterness or whether I chose blessing.
You've certainly been through a lot yourself, and probably most people who know you know about your husband's situation. Was that one of the more difficult things you faced recently?
Oh, absolutely. You know, and it still is an ongoing thing. About 9 years ago, Martin was diagnosed with a brain tumor and had a surgery to remove the tumor and had complications from the surgery. And he lives with a vision deficit and a memory deficit. Mm. And even, I guess, about 3 months ago, he had another short stint in the hospital. For about 3 weeks, he was hospitalized for pneumonia. And, you know, it's a very different road than we ever imagined ourselves walking. He's doing very well, but he does have a bit of a suppressed immune system due to his brain tumor complications and things like that. But yeah, it's very different than what we thought where we thought we would see ourselves, 10 years out from being married. We've gone through our share of trials, but we've seen God's goodness in the midst of them. And I don't want that to sound like too much of a pad answer, but we really have seen ways that the Lord has sustained us and the Lord has blessed us in a situation that I think would be easy for us just to see all the negatives of.
And you're coming out with a book, is that right, titled When God Doesn't Fix It? Will that help us understand more of your story and things you've been through?
Yes. You know, it's I never saw myself writing a book, but it's been a blessing that I have had this opportunity. And so many people have seemed to respond when I've had the opportunity to share our story, whether it's at retreats or in concerts. No one really thinks that their story is going to make an impact for the kingdom. You just kind of think, oh, this is my story. It's not like this story of, I wouldn't refer to it as a story of great faith. It's been more of a, it's not like the great missionary stories you read of, whether it's the Hudson Taylors or the, Amy Carmichael's. It's more of a girl and a guy that within the first year of marriage face this health issue. And then we've just kind of, we've really gotten in touch with our brokenness in the midst of it. It's not that we have faced it with this enormous amount of faith, but we've faced it with this enormous God that has this ability to take my mustard seed faith and do something amazing. And that's where I think the story really lies, is that God truly does sustain.
The title, When God Doesn't Fix It, intrigues me, Laura, because it gives me the sense that, you know, maybe there are some things that won't be right this side of heaven for those who believe in the Lord Jesus Christ. Yeah. And maybe God is still alive in the middle of it. You know, he still loves me. It's still, in that sense, it's still okay. Do you believe that?
Oh, absolutely. If I didn't believe it, then we definitely would have walked away from our faith by this point in our story. I grew up believing all these promises of God, and I grew up knowing that God is all powerful and that he's all loving and that he has a good and perfect plan for our life. But, you know, the more life you live, you realize that good and perfect plan doesn't always look like what we think it should. You know, we really came to a point with Martin's help where we realized that God was not fixing it the way we wanted to, or maybe not in the time frame that we were asking. And so that, you know, confronts you with the question, how do I continue to follow Jesus, continue to walk out my faith in this world when you can't understand the way that God is working in your life? And I think that that's where faith really comes into the picture, is trusting that there, you know, are pieces of the puzzle that we don't see. There's reasons behind the way that the Lord works that we don't know. I will tell you this, as little as I understand about why my life looks like it does this side of heaven, I have full confidence that there will be a day, you know, when we pass on to the next life, where I will look back on all of this and applaud how the Lord has dealt with me. And I think that that's faith. It's believing that God has a plan even when I can't see it, and even believing that I'll experience his goodness in the midst of this life. It's believing that we can have that abundant, joyful life without having that fix that we are asking God for.
You use the word joyful. So do you see a distinction, and this is not to get caught up in semantics, but I think it's important, between joy and happiness, between, you know, my comforts and my deep sense of confidence that God is alive in me and he's working for good. Can you help me with that some?
That's a great question. You know, you think about whatever word you want to use, whether joy, happiness, all that, there's certainly a version of it that this world tries to offer us. I mean, if you just turn on your television and every commercial is telling you how you can be happier, you know, and telling you that it's a car and it's a, you know, a vacation to Jamaica, whatever it is that they're trying to sell you during that, you know, 15-second slot. And that kind of joy is not what is taught about in the scriptures. What we see in the scriptures, you know, it would be more like, you know, if it was Paul making the commercial, it would say, hey, come spend the weekend in this jail cell. That's how you can really find that soul-satisfying joy that God offers you. Because that's what we hear from these biblical writers, is that joy isn't something that you purchase. It's something that you find when you are rock bottom. You find it when you're bankrupt. Because what you find is that there's a joy that we can have in the Lord that is more fulfilling than anything this life offers, more than anything this world can offer us. And it's something that sometimes we have to come to the end of ourselves in order to find just the richness of the joy that the Lord has to offer.
Mm. Laura, I know you are on the road a lot, and you probably see a lot of people even going overseas at times. And it seems to me that so much of the church in other parts of the world, outside the West, Europe, America, and the like, so many other parts, Africa, Asia, you know, we can go on and on, South America, there's more of something like a New Testament understanding of what the song should be in our hearts, how joy can bring us through sorrow, and how sorrow can be part of God's blessing. Would you agree with that? Talk to me a little bit about maybe an example of something you've seen or learned from someone overseas or from another culture.
Absolutely. I have a great relationship with an organization called Compassion International, and I've been with them for, gracious, almost 20 years, which is crazy. But I remember being a 19-year-old kid and going on my first trip with them and visiting this schoolhouse. When I say schoolhouse, that word I'm using generously, it was a two-room building where it was just cinder blocks. It was about twice the size of my bedroom. And there was a dirt floor. It was packed with kids. And I remember we were musicians visiting them, but they sang this song to us. And it was the old Don Moen song, Give Thanks. And as they sang about giving thanks with a grateful heart, just with these smiles just radiating from their faces, you know, I felt like I was supposed to be the, you know, the spiritual leader that's coming to impart something spiritual to them. But the truth was, I was just undone by it, because the joy that they sang about in that two-room dirt floor schoolhouse was something that I feel like I was missing out on. And that kind of began this quest for, you know, what if joy isn't found in help, wealth, and prosperity? And I began to pray that the Lord would show me what true joy was. And I am not too naive to think that the path he has led my family down is part of him answering that prayer. Not that God sends brain tumors. I don't believe that. But I do believe that he allows us to walk through less comfortable situations and less desired situations in order to show us that his primary goal in my life is not for me to be comfortable and it's not for me to be happy, but his primary goal is for me to seek him first and to believe that, you know, when I seek first the kingdom of heaven, that everything else will be added. And as much of a paradox as it is, there is a joy that we find when we let go of everything. When we let go of everything in this life, there is a joy that is gained. When we come to the end of prosperity in this life, there's a fullness that can be captured only by those who are truly seeking God's face.
Wow. That's beautifully stated. And it just really, I think, it's to the heart of what the Christian faith is all about. You mentioned Paul saying, hey, come on, have vacation with me in prison. You know, that's great.
Yeah.
So as I think about the songs you've written and so many songs I love, I'm wondering about the song Blessings. That's the one that really just takes me right to the heart of this idea of God's song in my heart. How did that come about, that song?
Well, I wrote it about 5 years after my husband was diagnosed with a brain tumor. And it was kind of looking back on what we had gone through. And it didn't start off as a song. It really started off just as a diary entry of me just contemplating, A, how different our lives looked than I thought they would, but B, how much richer our lives were than I ever imagined they could be. And trying to understand the role that trials play in that richness. You know, I feel like it was almost a journey that God invited me to go on with him, that he knew, I knew that there would be valleys and I knew there would be mountaintops, but it really was what we'd walked through as a family had been harder than we ever imagined. But somehow on the other side of it, but we're not really on the other side of it. We're still just on the journey. But in the midst of it, there really has been a richness to my faith and a depth to knowing God that I wouldn't have experienced if it hadn't have been for walking through that trial.
How about, I'll just pick another, great God who saves. I can imagine that came out of some of these experiences, did it?
Oh, yes. And that comes straight from the Psalms. There's a psalm that says, I would have despaired if I had not believed that I would see the goodness of the Lord in the land of the living. It just speaks to that idea that everything we walk through, you know, if we didn't know God, we would have reason to despair. That would make total sense in this world. You know, if when you get a cancer diagnosis, if you don't have a set of values or a creed that you live by that tells you that there's more than just the here and now, then there is reason to throw in the towel. But we as believers, if we trust the promises of God to be true, when we get that hard diagnosis, we don't have to despair. Not that we don't mourn, because, you know, it's human. And, you know, a lot of times people say, you know, why do you think that happened? And I say, well, at the end of the day, Romans 5:12 tells us that, you know, when sin entered the world, death entered the world. And so I believe it's a result of sin entering the world. At its most basic level, Martin was diagnosed with a brain tumor because of sin entering this world. But on a greater scale, like as far as what it has to do with my life today, I would say that, you know, through Martin's brain tumor, I believe that God will get glory. I think it's John 8 or 9, where the man that has been blind from birth, you know, the disciples say, why is he blind? Was it him who sinned or his parents? And Jesus, it's like he almost changes the question. And he says, no, he was born blind so that my glory might be displayed, so that the glory of the Father might be displayed. And it's trying to take the things that we walk through and say, God, we don't understand them this side of heaven, but we believe that there is glory for you to be had in the midst of our brokenness.
Hmm. And that gives us a picture of a loving God, but also an all-powerful God who doesn't just do things based on circumstances. He moves through every circumstance. As you say, we can't blame him for all problems, but he can redeem them. The most difficult things he can use for good. I'll just pick one more song here. Indescribable. A lot of people don't realize that glorious song that you composed that. I don't know if it's a lot, but I guess Chris Tomlin kind of helped that. Tell us about that. How'd that come about? And just talk about God a little bit. This God that you're believing in while you're going through these trials. And a lot of the world is saying, you know, if he was in charge, if he had power, Martin wouldn't be facing these things. He would have been healed a long time ago. You know, or maybe it's your lack of faith. But look at the words of Indescribable. I think you've got a lot of faith in a very powerful God.
Yes. And it's interesting. Some of these questions, they're way beyond me. Like, I can't answer why Martin got his brain tumor. And in the same way, it's funny you should mention Indescribable, because the second verse of that I basically took straight out of the book of Job. And I've actually had people come up to me and tell me that they strongly disagree with the opening line of the second verse, that, you know, for me to insinuate that God directs the lightning bolt. I've literally talked to people who have lost loved ones through being struck by lightning, and really frustrated with me that I would even write that. And I have to point them and say, hey, that actually was literally taken straight out of the book of Job, and I don't understand it any more than you do. But the point of it all is that God is bigger. God is bigger than the brain tumors, than any earthly losses, that God's plan is bigger. And our response to his grandeur, to not even his grandeur, you know, the response that God is looking for is our praise and our worship. It's like where Paul writes in Romans, who can fathom? And it's like that comes right after he's just finished talking about some really difficult teaching. And his response to it isn't, you know, let's be frustrated by this really difficult teaching. His response is, you know, who are we? We're just mere men. Who are we to understand the ways of God? And that really is the point of that song, Indescribable, because it was written just, I was driving through the mountains of Asheville, North Carolina, and just stunned by creation. And it was a moment of just remembering how small I am, and remembering that God is just such a big God and truly deserves and commands my praise.
You know, we're broadcasting from those mountains.
And, I knew that.
Yeah. Now,
are lucky you get to live there.
Oh, we're very blessed to go on vacation and always look forward to coming back. And you'll be up here. I know you'll be doing an evening at the Cove, and I don't know if you want to mention about that to our listeners, because some who are local may want to come out and hear you.
Yes, August 6th, I will be right there in Asheville, North Carolina, playing at the Cove. And the Cove is somewhere that I grew up right down the road from you guys in Spartanburg, South Carolina. And so the Cove has been a place that I've always enjoyed any opportunity I had to play there. But more than that, I think in the community of the Southeast and probably even further, it's been seen as a retreat center, very much a resource for people that want to grow in their faith, a place that people can go and hear great teaching or just to walk around and take in just the amazing creation that's found there. It's a privilege to get to be there with you guys, and I really would love to see anyone come out and spend the evening with us. It'll be a fun evening of worship as well as storytelling and hopefully just making much of God.
Now, Laura, I want to get a hold of your book. There may be others listening. I hope there are many who also want to read it when it comes out in September. How do we maybe pre-order? Is that possible?
Oh, I would love that. In this day and age, the pre-order ends up being pretty important as far as showing a lot of these secular bookstores that people are reading Christian living material. And so that would be a great thing. Amazon.com, BarnesandNoble.com, Books a Million, wherever people buy their books, whether it's on the internet or whether it's just at your local Christian bookstore. I'd love to hear what you think. I'd love for you to get to hear a little bit more of my story. And what we've found is between sharing it through writing, but also the live events, so much growth happens in my life just from being able to share my story and hearing other people's stories. So I encourage you to check it out, and hopefully God will be made much of with this project. That's my greatest desire.
So When God Doesn't Fix It, that's the book to look for. Just go onto Amazon and you can pre-order. Laura, we've got just a moment, if you can give us a closing thought about the song in our hearts. Do you, as a human being like the rest of us, do you always carry a happy song? Kind of what goes on in your heart? Encourage us to be more like David, more like that great songwriter.
Well, I think one thing about David that I appreciate, you look at his Psalms, and the way that we even have those is David taking a moment to stop and reflect and contemplate. And really, his writings are all about who he knows God to be intersects with his daily life. That's what we hear from pretty much every psalm. It's who God is and what that has to do with what he's going through right then. I'd say the greatest lesson to learn would be to take the time to do that. In this world that is so busy and just seems to be getting busier and busier, I know that it's really a discipline for me to set aside that time to bring my life before God and say, God, I need to hear from you in my decision making. I need to basically align my life plan and my activities of the day with who you say that I am and who you say you want me to be. And so I would just encourage people to, even if it's 10, 15 minutes a day, just to set aside to hear from the Lord, to meditate on his word. I believe that that's something that's just kind of getting lost in the wayside. I say it not in a preachy kind of way. I'm saying that that's what God's teaching me right now. Somehow I will find the time to spend checking Facebook, but don't seem to be able to find the time to spend just sitting quietly before the Lord. And I think that that's where that song in our heart is cultivated.
Thank you, Laura. This has been an encouragement and a challenge to me, and I hope to many. And we ask every blessing on you from the Lord as you continue your ministry of song, of writing, of ministering. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Bill.
This has been Beyond Words with Dr. William Campbell. Beyond Words is a ministry of Scripture awakening. And if you'd like to help support this ministry, or if you would like to know about Beyond Words, visit us on our website at scriptureawakening.com.